Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Triwa. My special guest this evening is Tobias Wayland, a Fortean investigator, researcher, author, and founder of the Singular Fortean Society. Welcome aboard, Tobias.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yes. Been meaning to have you for a while, to be very honest.
Well, I'm glad that our schedules finally aligned so we could make it happen.
Yes, indeed. You have something new out. Would you like to tell us about that?
Oh, sure. So the last book that I put out, well, my wife Emily and I really, she was pretty heavily involved in this book. She does the layout and design and cover art for every book, but she was more involved in this than maybe the previous two, at least in their creation, simply by the fact that she did all of the illustrations as well. But yeah, we just put out the Singular Fortean Society's Yuletide Guide to High Strangeness. That came out, I want to say, in November, just in time for the holidays, of course. And it covered a variety of strange holiday related phenomena. And so something I tried to do in that was examine weird holiday folklore, but you know, not just that, because there are lots of books out there that already do that, right? But examine it in light of the kinds of anomalous phenomena that are still reported today, because something I can't help but notice, of course, when I'm looking at most folklore, is the similarities between those kinds of stories and the reports that we still receive, you know. So UFO flaps and reports of the Wild Hunt, for instance, you know, they have a lot of similarities. And if you really want to dig into the Wild Hunt, you can get into stuff like Asgardsrea, which has a lot of similarities with things like alien abduction or alien home invasion, like those types of narratives. So that's really what I tried to focus on, was those kinds of connections, because they seemed relatively apparent to me. And it was something that I hadn't seen a lot of people talking about yet. And so I thought it would be interesting to get this book out and maybe get more conversations started about those kinds of topics.
That does sound fascinating. For those listeners that may not be aware of this, when you say the Wild Hunt, correct me if I'm wrong, you're referring to a phenomena where people see what are often referred to as the fae or fairies in a large group, like almost like a parade, and people may be taken away by them. And this goes more to like medieval times and, you know, hundreds of years ago, but it still happens, or people still see it.
Well,
Would that be about
it's
right?
sure. It's strongly related to that. Specifically, when you start talking about the Wild Hunt, it is traditionally led by some large folkloric figure. So most often that would be Odin or Woden in the Anglo-Saxon. Or you know, there are other characters also, interestingly enough, associated with the holiday season, such as Frau Perchta, or Lucy, are also said to lead their own forms of the Wild Hunt. And so you've got this spectral hunt, again, most often led by some powerful known named figure. And yeah, it's said to sort of roam the land. Its intentions, or the intentions of its participants, vary considerably depending on who's telling the story, right? So, you know, you get some figures like Frau Perchta, and her wild hunt is she's leading the souls of dead children, a lot of the time, you know. Whereas Odin is leading a spectral hunt full of dead warriors, you know, who have come to his hall in Valhalla, right? So, but what's similar amongst all of them is this idea that at certain times of the year, when the wind is howling and it's cold and it's dark, you want to avoid being outside alone, because you might encounter this wild hunt. And it does have a lot in common with fairy processions, like you mentioned. The Asgardsreia, which it literally translates to Asgard's ride, really sounds more like a fairy procession in the way that it has evolved in folklore than it does an actual wild hunt led by Odin or somebody. You know, when I was doing research for this book, I actually found, as part of the Federal Writers Project, which was during the Great geez, I can't talk. During the Great Depression, rather, the federal government paid all of these writers, so they had jobs, right? When
Yes,
nobody had
yes.
jobs, paid them to go around and collect all of this folklore. And of course, they did that in every state in the Union, including Wisconsin. And one of the stories that they collected in Wisconsin is of this Asgardsreia, which was brought over by an immigrant from Norway, and so they related their experience being told about this tradition, you know, by their mother, and what they described really sounded, like I said, much more similar to a fairy procession. So what they were talking about was these underground people. So these diminutive figures that normally live underground coming up above ground every Christmas Eve to basically wreak havoc, like just troop across the land, like break into people's houses, steal their food, all of this stuff, right? Which is interesting to me because that sounds so similar to so much of what has been said in fields like ufology. You know, the first thing I was reminded of actually was like Whitley Strieber's first remembered UFO abduction experience, which took place around Christmas time in his family's cabin in upstate New York. And that began with him hearing this sound, like a great whooshing sound through his house, which preceded the home invasion by these diminutive figures, right? And I think that context is everything when it comes to stuff like this. And cultural bias is so important when you're examining these things. Because I think in another time and place, it might have been called something else. I don't know that it would have been referred to as alien abduction. I think it could have easily been the Asgardsreia, frankly, and that's what people would have called it. And you're right too. One of the reasons as well that people are warned away from going out when there might be an opportunity to run into the wild hunt is for fear of being taken. You know, that's something that we can see in folklore. And now, I don't want people to misunderstand my point either. It certainly isn't to say that all of folklore is caused by things that we now understand to be extraterrestrials from space, you know, stealing people. Because I don't think we know any more about it now than we did then. I think that we have our own cultural bias, and I think that we have our own lens that we view these things through. And so I think for us in the age of materialism, it has become this thing that we refer to as alien abduction, and we kind of put it in this we couch it in like the language of science fiction.
Yes.
Because that's just where we're at right now. And in another 1,000 years, people might look back and say, oh, wow, you know, that thing called that people used to call alien abduction, it's still around today, but now we call it this. And I don't know if they'll actually understand it by then or not, but it won't necessarily mean either of us are actually correct about its true nature. It's just we all like to think that the time in which we live is the most intelligent, the most learned age to yet exist. And the reality is we're just as dumb now as we were 1,000, 2,000, 4,000 years ago. We just have the benefit of all of that learning and all of those mistakes that our ancestors made on our behalf, so we didn't have to learn from. But it doesn't mean that we have
Oh
every
no.
mystery solved,
And that's important whenever you're thinking about the past. People in the past didn't think of it as the past. It was cutting edge. It was the present. It was, this is what's going on now. And, because it's easy to look at even some relatively recent times and say, well, they thought that then. The people in between World War I and World War II didn't think of themselves as being in the interwar years. Because they didn't know what the hell was going to happen, and rarely are predictions of this is what it's going to be like. Well, you're roughly similar to my age, and you probably remember countless by the year 2000, this will happen, and then most of those things did not happen, but other things did happen that nobody saw predicted. I'm thinking of one of the novels by Philip K. Dick, and he's writing in the 60s and he sets it in the 1990s, which is far off and, glamorous. And they have these astronauts on Mars and they have a space station and they're all, that's a going thing. But when the astronauts are done for the day and want to relax, they put on a cassette tape and listen to music. And it's like, so some of the technology didn't happen, but other technology totally did. And it was, yeah. And it's really tough to pick what's going to happen and what's not,
Oh, definitely. Like we're at the point now where we have passed certain historical dates in stuff like Star Trek, where they just assumed that it was fine to go ahead and be like, oh yeah, we'll just say such and such happened in 2000 whatever. That's like 60 years from now. Who cares? Now it's just like, well, we have officially deviated from the Star Trek timeline as of, like 30 years ago.
Yes,
So
we're not where we should be.
it just is what it is. But also there are all kinds of things that we would find like anachronistic in shows like that too. Like every time I'm watching like TNG or something, and they just have like a data pad for everything. And I'm like, really? The Enterprise doesn't have wireless? Like they can't just, there's not a cloud. They don't just share this between devices. Like we need a separate data pad for every single thing. Just
Just
stacks of
having a
them.
bridge to drive the ship, like it's, we barely need that for the space shuttle and stuff. It's the 300 years from now, the computers wouldn't be driving it,
Oh yeah, and don't get me wrong, I love Star Trek. I'm not gonna stop watching it.
Oh,
It's
no,
just
no.
you notice stuff like that because in the 80s and 90s when TNG was being made, like I mean, no, I don't think anybody saw where we were going as far as
Oh,
like
no.
wireless technology. People just weren't predicting it. So
You bring up something interesting with the timing of your book, your latest book. People often think that Halloween is like the scary supernatural time. But really, Christmas was traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong, around Christmas time is when the veil was the thinnest and the dead might be seen and entities might come out. And that makes a lot of sense because you're right around the winter solstice. Didn't want to call it the equinox, because it's the opposite, but the darkest, longest night of the year. And there's probably a lot of folklore for that reason, I would guess.
Well, and what's interesting to me too, and I think this has caused a lot of confusion. What you see now in many, if not all, neo-pagan traditions is this conflation of disparate cultures. So in this case, and I think probably most commonly, what you get is the conflation of Celtic and Germanic cultures. So, I have both, and they didn't celebrate the same holidays. The Celts had Samhain, but my Germanic ancestors didn't. Like, that was not a thing that they cared about. And they had Yule, but my Celtic ancestors didn't. That wasn't a thing that they cared about. And so you have these two separate holidays from two completely different cultures that kind of fill the same purpose in many ways, right?
Oh,
And
yes.
when they have been brought together by these people who are, I guess, fine with appropriating whatever they want to live in whatever fantasy that they're living in, then it becomes very confusing very quickly because you lose all of the nuance necessary to understand them and understand their place. And so I don't think it's fair to say that one is spookier than the other because they're not meant to exist in the same space. Like they're different holidays from different cultures that have some overlap because I think what really is the case is that every culture on this planet has times of year associated with what are fundamental human experiences. And one of those fundamental human experiences is wanting to connect with the dead, wanting to connect with the numinous, wanting to take part in a spiritual life, And so it makes perfect sense to me that these would exist in different cultures or have evolved in different cultures because I think these kinds of things evolve in every culture, honestly.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense. And it's just to the comment, it's really difficult, if not nigh impossible, to reconstruct a ancient religion based on what we know now and
Oh,
then
yeah.
practice that. I mean, that's asking a lot,
Yes.
And you can, it's going to be very individual. What your practice is. But I don't know that anybody walking the earth today can really experience what it was like to believe in Zeus the way that an ancient Roman would. That it's a totally different mindset. It's very hard to replicate.
Yeah, I mean the big issue, of course, being that pre-Christianity, none of my ancestors kept written records, none of them, and so everything we know about Celtic or Germanic paganism is as recorded by Roman scholars or later Christian monks, right? That's not giving us a very unbiased perspective. Like, well, using because Norse paganism is relatively popular these days. Like, there's literally one source for that, by and large, that everybody uses. You've got the prose Eddas and the poetic Eddas and that's basically it. Like, that's everything that you're going to see about the Norse gods and their names and their relationships and stories about them and what they were up to and stuff come from those sources. But they're relatively recent, like within the past like 700-ish years, and they're both from one guy in Iceland, So like we just don't have that much information, and neither one of those, by the way, to your point, really gives us much insight into the practice of pagan religion, especially because at that time, this is well past conversion to Christianity, and so they were written in such a way as to be sympathetic to Christianity, because sort of the popular viewpoint there for people who wanted to preserve their Germanic culture and the folklore and mythology that came with it, but still be Christians, was to say, okay, well, look, like, we were always working up to Christianity, right? You know, like, it's totally fine. Like, it's not blasphemous, because like, they weren't like gods, right? Like, they were just really powerful heroes and stuff who did all of this like really miraculous kind of stuff before we knew better and we had actual Christianity. And yeah, so like, there isn't a single unbiased source for that information, because we didn't write any of it ourselves when it was actually happening. We just have the perspective of conquerors and colonizers and stuff looking back, writing about it later. And you know, I whatever. If anybody thinks that's a good unbiased source to go by, well, I've got a bridge to sell you, you know?
Yes, I'm thinking of a lot of the stuff in and just what's known completely of the Aztecs and the Incas, and a lot of that's recorded by monks who were there to wipe out that religion. And that's not a very good source for information. It would be kind of like if some real radical, like communist group took over and wiped out Christianity, and we didn't have the Bible. We just had stuff people kind of remembered, and you put it together, you're going to get something. It's not going to resemble any type of Christianity we have today.
Yeah.
It's just going to be bits and pieces and a lot of imagination,
Right.
So yeah,
100% correct.
it's interesting. We kind of leaped right into your latest work, but I guess we should really start kind of more from the beginning now that I'm half hour into
Sure,
it
we
here.
can circle back to that. That's fine.
Yes. So what's your origin story? How did you get interested in the paranormal and the 14 and looking into this stuff?
Sure. So, I like to tell people that if I wouldn't have had the experiences that I've had in my life, I can say with all sincerity that I don't know how into any of this I would be. I'm a pretty nerdy guy regardless. So I might
Nothing
have
wrong with
a
that.
right. So I might have like a passing interest in it. But it's really only because of the things that I've experienced throughout my life that I have the kind of passion that has led me to do the work that I've done. So from a very young age, my earliest memories, or some of my earliest memories, were of being terrified, specifically to go to bed at night. And I mean like 2, 3, 4 years old, where really all you've got are like fragments, you know. Like I remember waking up to the feeling of like hands digging into my ribs, or being lifted out of bed, or that old childhood protection ritual of pulling the blankets over your head and trying to sleep that way. Only I remember seeing what looked like hands pressing in from the outside when I would do that. And well, and if that's all that had been, I think I would have written it off as childhood imagination or something similar. But this kind of stuff continued throughout my entire life, really. I mean, ongoing, honestly. Now there was, I mean, so I would see shadow people. I would have these strange nighttime visitations. I can remember seeing faces above my bed that resembled nothing so much as what people would conceive of now as the classical gray, right? There's a good example actually, and I've got a few of these in my book, Strange Tales of the Impossible. But this is one that's always stuck out. So was in my early 20s, and I was living at home at the time, sort of between things, as people often are at that age. And I had gone to bed normally one night, and I remember waking up very suddenly, and there was no apparent reason, like no obvious reason why I should have woken up. We lived in the suburbs of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and so there was some ambient light that would come in through my window. And so, looking around, suddenly awake, I was able to see well enough. I could see the outline of everything in my room, and everything was pretty much where it was supposed to be. And it took me a second, but I realized something was off, and that something was that I appeared to be floating several feet above my bed. And I looked to my left. Now, I wasn't paralyzed or anything. I could move. In that moment, I decided it probably wasn't a great idea to move too much, considering my current
Yes.
situation. But I turned my head over. And I looked to my left, because on the other side of me was a wall. So, and I saw this figure, roughly man-sized and shaped, but completely black. And it was standing next to my bed. And so at the height that I was floating, I would have been like chest high to this thing, right? And I looked at it, and I had this distinct impression that I wasn't supposed to be awake for this. And when I looked over at this thing, it held its hand out. It reached its arm out and put its hand on my chest. And I always interpreted that as being comforting, but I don't really know its actual intention. And at that point, I was lowered back down to my bed, and it just vanished.
Wow.
And so I laid there. At this point in my life, again, I'm in my early 20s. This kind of stuff had been happening to me throughout my entire life, not necessarily in as spectacular an example of as that, but often enough where I figured out as a child that it was pointless to go bother my parents or anything. Like literally, that just led to grumpy parents, like waking them up for something like that, right? Like, I don't know that it was that they didn't believe me necessarily, but I think at least until relatively recently, when I started writing books and stuff, I think part of it for them, the way they count, like the way that they compartmentalized it, was as a sort of childhood phenomenon. This kids just have nightmares, kids' imaginations get away with them, like just get away from them and stuff.
Which
And
is something
I
that does happen, but
Sure.
it's not all
Yeah.
encompassing.
Right. And I don't blame them for that. I think they were doing their best. And I don't I don't harbor any grudges or anything, and I don't want people to think that I do. I love my parents. But I that's kind of how they dealt with it. And so and without them having experienced anything, again, like you said, kids do have nightmares. Kids do imagine things. And so I don't think that it was even necessarily wrong for them to treat it that way. Again, so at that point, I knew that there was no reason for me to wake them up. And quite frankly, if I was going to be hurt, and I remember thinking this, if I was going to be hurt, I would have been hurt by then, because there's nothing I could do to stop whatever this is from hurting me. If it wanted to hurt me, I would be hurt. It hasn't yet, and I'm 44 now, so that's I've had a pretty good run of not being hurt by whatever this is.
Yes.
And yeah, so I remember also distinctly being on top of my covers, and it lowered me back down, and I'm on top of my covers, and I certainly hadn't fallen asleep that way. And so yeah, I laid there for a while, and eventually I just rolled over, and I went back to sleep. I kind of thought about it and thought about what happened, and I couldn't really make sense of it. And so I just went back to sleep. And I know that that reaction sounds bizarre to some people, but again, like
Is
I,
incredibly common though in people that
yeah,
have nighttime experiences.
it's weird to
It's
say, but you get used to it.
And it's just, I mean, people that have seen all sorts of things, the turning over and going back to sleep is just incredibly common. So it wasn't the house. It had nothing to do with the location.
No,
It's followed you
no.
wherever you've gone.
Yeah, people have asked me if I thought my house was haunted, and I don't think so because it follows me wherever I go. So if anything's haunted, it's me. You know.
Wow. And this is not to like debunk anything at all, but there does seem to be a correlation. Did you ever have sleep apnea? I'm not sleep apnea, not sleep apnea, sleep paralysis.
Sure. Yeah. You know, and that's something that I considered. Now, sleep paralysis is relatively common in children. And, you know, I had cases where I occasionally would have a bad dream, and the dream would be so bad that I would wake up and try to scream, but I couldn't scream. Like, you've ever had that happen when you were a kid?
I had
But
one incident of sleep paralysis in my life.
okay.
And it was the, I don't even like to call it that because most people describe sleep paralysis and it's horrible.
Sure.
Mine was not horrible.
Right.
I had been working some crazy hours where I was sometimes working night shift and sometimes working during the day and doing a fair amount of overtime, but not at the same schedule. So my rhythm was all thrown to hell. And one day I was sleeping in the early evening because I had to go into work at night. And I woke up and I realized that my body was still asleep. I could open my eyes, but that was it. But,
Weird.
and I realized, well, my brain has woken up, but my body is still completely asleep.
Sure.
But it wasn't terrifying. There were no entities. There was nothing going on. I was just
Right.
in my bedroom. And so I said, well, I may as well just go back to sleep because I'm not doing anything at this point.
Yeah.
And
Well, I mean,
it, you know, it
there's
was,
literally a
yeah.
chemical released to keep you paralyzed so you don't hurt yourself by acting your dreams out.
Absolutely. Yes.
So.
Yes. Because,
But
yes, otherwise you'd be running about the house doing all sorts of things in your sleep. And yeah, that's
right.
not healthy. You know?
Yeah. So I mean, like that makes total sense. And I don't think everybody who experiences sleep paralysis has the kinds of waking nightmares that are described. Certainly those are the most sensational cases, and that's what people want to hear about.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, no, I think it's there are probably plenty of people who've had similar experiences yourself. Now, I'll say that I've never had what would be considered like classical sleep paralysis. Like I've never woken up and not been able to move. Again, the closest I would come would be waking up so scared that I couldn't scream. Like you try to scream, but you just can't. And it's not because I couldn't move. Like you're sitting there and your mouth is open and you're trying to scream, but you're so afraid that like you just you, there's it's hard to describe, but like you're just so afraid that like there's no sound, you know, like you're just almost like choking on your own scream.
Yeah, you're
But
just frozen in fear, yeah.
I wasn't paralyzed though, is the thing, you know, like that I could move it because I would sit there in bed, and then sometimes I would even sit up and try to scream and not be able to.
Wow.
Yeah, no, like nothing like sleep paralysis, and it's something I had to consider. You know, when I've written about this, you know, it's the first thing that I think of, you know. I think it's the first thing most people think of. And that's why when I tell that story, there are certain aspects of it or any of the things that have happened to me that are similar. I go out of my way to share all of the pertinent details. Because the reality was that like I wasn't paralyzed. I wasn't. And it lasted longer than is normal for a hallucination to last, you know.
Like one of those
Hallucinations.
psychopomp, not a psychopomp, the things that you may see immediately upon waking
Sure.
or as you're going right almost to sleep.
Right. So there are hypnagogic and
Hypnagogic,
hypnopompic.
that's the word. Yes.
Right. Well, there's two. There's hypnagogic and there's hypnopompic, and it's really just waking up or falling. asleep, right? And the hallucinations associated with those states. Yeah, I mean, normally hallucinations last a few seconds, right? At the absolute most. If you're talking about something like sleep paralysis, where you're sort of stuck in this dream state, I've heard of them lasting longer, at least from people's experiences, maybe like a minute or more, right? But again, I think that relies on being in that sort of in that dream state, which I'm not. I wasn't. That is to say, so if you're capable of moving around and looking around and stuff, there is a hallucination, it should be over in just a second or two. For it to last 30, 45 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, that would be weird as hell. Like that's not normal for hallucinations at all. So the idea that it was something like those kinds of hallucinations associated with these dream states, it doesn't make sense to me because I wasn't in the right state. I wasn't in the right state of consciousness for that to be happening, really.
Other than being really scared, you're as like lucid as you are right now.
Oh yeah.
Which is a very different than sleep phenomenon.
Right. If I was asleep then, I might be asleep now. Yeah,
That
honestly.
and that's interesting. Did any of the beings that you ever saw or interacted with try to give you some kind of message or anything?
I wish,
It clears things up a lot.
right. Yeah, like I've read about so many contactees and stuff, and they get to hang out with like attractive space people and their flying saucers and get all these messages of warning us against like nuclear armament and environmental disasters and stuff. And all I got was the crap scared out of me. Yeah, no, I mean, not anything that I could make any sense out of. I've certainly had some dreams that felt like dream visitation where I've received messages, but I don't know that that's the same phenomenon, because they do feel very, very separate. Like I said, when I for the most part, when I have experienced the really scary nighttime visitations, I always had the distinct feeling that I wasn't supposed to be awake for it. Like whatever was happening, it wasn't for me. It was for them, and I was just part of it. I had some role to play, but my active participation was not required. In fact, my active participation was frowned on. Like they didn't want that.
That's
So.
really interesting because it begs the question, well, what were they doing? What's their motive? What are they looking for? That is really interesting. And
I have
probably,
no idea.
yeah, something that you're probably no closer to knowing the answers to that one than you were when it happened, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, from my experience, and I have spoken to some people who've had similar experiences over the years, and there seems to be a quality of observation to these experiences. Where people are being watched, tracked, sort of kept track of. But beyond that, I mean, I don't know why or for what reason. So who
Wow.
knows?
I have to tell you, Tobias, your answer was not what I expected at all
No.
because no, it wasn't. Because just of your work, you are very meticulous in looking at, evidence and witness statements and other possibilities, and are not, you don't really come off as a believer type, but like a real, straightforward investigator who wants to find facts and stuff. in a
Sure.
way that, sometimes people who are experiencers may have a different attitude about it, that, well, I don't
Right.
have to prove anything. I know this happened because it happened to me, and that's fine. But it's a lot more interesting when you're out there really, trying to, well, it could be this, or it could be something else. I just finished your Great Lakes Mothman,
Oh, sure. The Lake
Midwest
Michigan.
Lake Michigan Mothman.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm gonna
Yep.
mangle the name when I
No,
just
that's
yeah.
all right.
And that was really interesting,
Well, thank you.
and it yeah, and it was I liked how you did, look at different possibilities and, go through them and, well, does this meet the criteria? And if so, why or why not? And it was, it was a real investigation. It wasn't just, we're going to take everything anybody says at face value and just say, this is what happened. Well, no,
Right.
it could have been a bird. And some of them probably were birds, but not all of them, because birds don't tend to be 7 feet tall, humanoid, and like stare you down,
Right, of course.
So that's very, very interesting book.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. To go back to, I guess, where that kind of started with the matter of experiencers and believers, right? Like, I don't think that uncritical belief has gotten us anywhere in this field. Like, we've got almost a century of it at this point, and it has gotten us absolutely nowhere. And so I get it. I really do get it. And especially when I was younger, there were definitely times in my life where I found narratives that either made sense to me or I wanted to believe, and I might have associated them with my own experiences. And I think that's a perfectly human thing to do. It
Oh,
really
yes.
is. We want to make sense of things. We need to make sense of things. But there isn't always sense to be made. And for me, with maturity came that recognition, and ultimately it's something that I've made my peace with. The idea that we don't know and we may never know. And so this human need to explain everything, to try to understand everything is great, as long as we are trying to do it critically
Yes,
and
yes.
with some objectivity, and so, like, for me, people will ask, well, because there's such a big division, like there's this dichotomy in the paranormal between, like, believers and debunkers, and like ne'er the twain shall meet, right? If
Yes,
they're oil and
indeed.
water, you just absolutely opposite ends of the spectrum, and that's fine, but neither one to me is particularly helpful, and neither one is necessarily a goal that we should be striving for. People will ask me, well, what do you believe? And I'll have to tell them, well, I don't believe in anything, and not like in some weird nihilistic sense,
No,
but
no, I know precisely. I say that myself sometimes, that
like in the sense that, like, I don't know. We don't have good answers. We don't have enough evidence of any conclusion for me to say that in good faith that I could invest belief in any of it, so I
That's
just
something
I
that
don't.
John Keel used to say, that belief is the enemy. Once you
Yeah.
believe that this is this, then you're gonna f all of your investigation is going to be to find things that prove that this is what I think it is, what I
Right.
believe it is, and your objectivity is, compromised, and you're going to have an unintentional, even if you try not to, you're going to have a bias towards finding things that support your belief and dismissing things that don't.
Yes.
And I hate the questions of, well, do you believe in UFOs? Which inevitably means, do you believe that they're nuts and bolts ships coming from another planet carrying physical aliens?
Right.
And while I don't take that totally off the table, I don't think that's the most likely explanation. And I think that the term UFO is quite an umbrella that covers several different things at a minimum. That is my two cents.
Oh, totally. You know,
You know.
I would say that, like, I don't believe in anything that requires my belief to exist. You know, things either
Well said.
exist or they don't. You know, and if we don't know for sure one way or another, it's okay to say that. It's
Yes.
okay to say, I don't know. And I think people should normalize that. I think people need to get used to saying, I don't know, and meaning it. Honestly.
Agnosticism is often not very popular, but
Right.
that is to me the most realistic way to face the world. That, you know, do you believe it? No, I don't believe in really, like you said, in really anything. You know, I believe in a few things, but I believe we're sitting in this room. You know, I'm sitting in this room right now, but I'm
Sure.
nut about it. But you know, as far as things that I cannot explain, there are many. There are most. You know,
Right.
just to throw out one more Philip K. Dick quote. I may be paraphrasing slightly, but only slightly. Reality is that which doesn't disappear when you stop believing in it. And
Right.
that kind of jived with what you were saying there, that, you know, if it's real, I don't need to believe in it because I can demonstrate it. You know, I can go look at
Yes.
one, you know. If
Right.
I have to believe in it, then I don't, you know.
100%. There are things we know and there are things we don't know. And the things that we don't know far outnumber those that we do. And we just need to be brave enough to say that way more often. Or, you know, I
Yes.
mean, some people are probably just grifting or something where
Oh,
they
yeah.
want to,
Unfortunately, that is epidemic
you
in
know,
this field. Yes.
right. Yeah. But, you know, beyond that, you know, people just need to accept that we don't have, we just don't have good answers.
Yes.
And that's okay. The one thing I will say that I do very much believe in, because I have very, very good evidence for it, is that people are experiencing things they can't explain. They are
Oh,
experiencing things
yes.
they don't understand. Whether or not those things ultimately have a prosaic explanation or are representative of some greater reality that we do not yet fully grasp, that's the part that's up in the air. But
Yes.
that things are happening to people that are beyond their understanding, that is happening without a doubt, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And has been happening throughout history and across all cultures, and is interpreted in many different ways, but there is something that people are experiencing. And again, it could have some normal or at least natural explanation, some sort of field affecting your brain or something. I mean, there are things that could explain that, at least some of them, but that people are experiencing really strange things is, yeah, that's a fact. They're not all making it up. They're not all hoaxing it. They're not all. Sometimes the lights in the sky are headlights, but not all the time, you know?
Right.
And there is something there. And it's in the last few years, it started to get more notice. But one of the things I find really fascinating is the kind of clustering that happens. That if a person sees a cryptid, let's say, they're also likely to see a UFO and likely to have poltergeist activity in their house. And it's just like, why the hell would that be? You know, it's like something seems to be involved there that we don't begin to understand. And
Oh,
that,
sure.
yeah.
I think it depends on your viewpoint there, right? Like, I think that a cynic might say that the reason for that is they're fantasy prone and thus, you know, more likely to misinterpret or twist experiences and events to fit a fantastical narrative. But I haven't really always found that to be true. I think some people, when they say, "Oh, you know, I've experienced this and this and this," and it sort of stretches the limits of credulity to believe them. Sure, maybe they are fantasy prone, but certainly not everyone with whom I've spoken, not everyone with whom I've interacted is that way. There does seem to be this propensity for not repeated individual phenomena, but repeated experiences, like separate experiences, multiple experiences of various seemingly disparate phenomena within people's lifetimes. Now, that's not always the case, and I would argue that it's not even most of the time. Most of the people with whom I speak have had maybe one experience, and that's it. If they saw Mothman or Bigfoot or UFO or something, that's the only weird thing that's ever happened to them. But you're right, there are other people, and it's a sizable minority, like big enough to be noticed and not just written off, who will have multiple experiences involving different phenomena. Like, so maybe they have witnessed a winged humanoid, and then, a year or two later, they see a UFO, right? Or, I spoke to a lady out in Maryland who was with her son when they were driving late at night, and they saw this winged humanoid in the road. And then later, because I always ask people if they've had any other weird experiences, right? Like, especially around the time of when, whatever happened, they actually contacted me to talk about it happened, right? And so after this experience, when I asked her that question, she said, "Well, I don't know if it's related, but after that, we had this radio that kept turning itself on." And like, that was the only other weird thing. But so they see this weird winged humanoid out in Maryland, and then they get home, and for the next, I don't know how long, a few weeks or months, like their radios would turn itself on randomly.
Yes, that's and it's just fascinating. Why would the one thing, and correlation's not causation, but if that's the only weird thing that really has ever happened to you, what's the connection? It seems like there should be a connection, and
Right.
it's tough. It has not been explained to this point. Yes.
It is difficult. I think for stuff like that, it's not beyond the realm of possibility or outside of the limits of my imagination to think of reasons why that might be, right? Like, is it possible that encountering something like that either affects your consciousness or relies on a certain state of consciousness? Could it have some kind of residual effect on people? I mean, just for the sake of argument, like, let's say that these sightings are more, not necessary, but are more likely to happen if, say, you are in a particular state of consciousness when they happen. Like, I get a lot of people who have had sightings when they're kind of doing something else and their mind is elsewhere, right? So driving, that's a big one, So who knows how much highway hypnosis could play a part in what I'm talking about. But like, let's say, for instance, like, it is likelier that you need this sort of altered state of consciousness. And then, maybe a similar state of consciousness is necessary or conducive, really. Not, again, not necessary, but conducive to parapsychological things like telekinesis, for instance. And having this experience, who knows, maybe it locks you into that alternate state for some time afterwards, right? Like, it's traumatic enough that you just kind of get locked into it for some time. And so you have these other weird effects that pop up as a result. And so they're related in that sense, but there's no direct link in that the original phenomenon didn't like follow you home and start causing it or anything. So, but that's all speculation. I have no idea. But like, those are the kinds of imaginings that I have around these things, like that kind of speculation, where I think that It could be a lot of things, and it is puzzling, but I think if we're willing to sort of have fun with it and speculate, we can certainly come up with some reasons why that might be,
Oh yes, and that's to me, that's the fun part, is kind of speculating and conjecturing what could possibly explain this, whether it be, paranormal or not. It's just interesting. It's really interesting. Let me just a couple things I wanted to make sure I got to ask you. In your research and looking into things, what, if any, cryptids do you think might be just undiscovered animals?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's easy to me. The thylacine down in Australia, definitely.
Yes.
And anomalous big cat sightings, whether they be in the Eastern US or in Great Britain, yeah, definitely I think those have a very high probability of being undiscovered animals. Similar to like well, we know giant squid it exists now, but certain lake monsters, maybe definitely sea monsters, if
Yes,
You get people who talk about, like seeing these enormous sort of serpentine creatures and stuff, and I wouldn't be surprised because there's so much that we just haven't explored.
vastness of the ocean. Yeah, there could be all sorts of things that, yeah, I can
Right.
see
But
that.
like most of the other like cryptids, and the cryptid is a loaded word now too, because if you're not using it to like to describe specifically like hidden animals, then people just get all over you about it. So you can't call the Flatwoods Monster a cryptid on accident or something, because that is, yeah, that's a cardinal sin. Right. But yeah, I think those for sure. A lot of people would probably say Bigfoot, but I wouldn't go that far. Would I be shocked to find out that there was an undiscovered primate species living on this continent? Well, yeah, I think most people would be shocked, but
Yes.
would it be outside of the realm of a possibility where no, I don't think so. But because of the associated high strangeness with so many of those experiences as described, I think we have to allow for other possibilities too. So like
Yes.
I can't say with any certainty with something like Bigfoot that it would be most likely to be an undiscovered natural species, like I would like a thylacine that we knew existed
Yes.
and is just supposedly extinct now, or like these big cats in the UK, where they just act like big cats,
And
and
we
there
know
have
that
been,
cougars and mountain lions, we know they exist. It's just a question of where do they exist? Yeah.
exactly. And on the subject of that word cryptid, like this is what always trips me up. So people who insist on cryptid meaning hidden animal, like that's fine. Okay, great. Now I have a couple questions for people like that though, like because I think it becomes necessary to make a serious decision about your personal outlook and perspective at that point. So for those people, like I have to ask, okay, do you then believe in the possibility of parapsychological phenomena, be that, psychic powers or magic, whatever you want to call it, in human beings? So, and if the answer to that is yes, then are human beings still animals? Because if they are, then we have to redefine what we mean when it comes to things like cryptid. Because if human beings can be psychic, if we can be clairvoyant or telekinetic or whatever, and we're capable of that, and we're still animals, then why can't Bigfoot, right? Then
Fair enough.
why would that make him less of a cryptid? Why would that make any of these cases where not just Bigfoot, but the Kelly Hopkinsville goblins, or I already mentioned the Flatwoods
Flatwoods monster, yeah,
monster,
so
or the Loveland Frogmen or something.
yes.
Like, what? Why would that make them less of a cryptid? If we're still animals, then why can't they still be animals? And if they're still animals, then why can't they be cryptids?
Well said, yes, that exactly that. I have great difficulty with the flesh and blood hypothesis for the simple reason I could believe that there was a undiscovered primate, even a big one, but you'd never see it. There wouldn't be a breeding population or else we'd have a bot. I'm thinking in the island of Java, there is alleged to be a creature that's called an orang pendek. You've probably heard about, and kind of like an orangutan that walks upright. I could believe that. If they found one tomorrow, I would be surprised, but I wouldn't, my world wouldn't be shaken. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah,
It
of course.
wouldn't really violate any of the laws of, biology or zoology. The thing is, nobody ever sees it. I'm thinking of, this is a while back, but it may have been Josh Gates that does that cable show and goes look for things. And Expedition X, I think it's called. And I may be
Oh,
thinking of
I was
somebody
on
else.
that.
Oh,
Okay.
wow. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, I think he does Expedition Unknown, and then
Expedition, right.
Expedition X is Phil and Jessica. Very
Okay.
nice people.
Okay. Whoever I'm thinking of went looking for the Orang Pendek. And so they go to Indonesia. They go to the island of Java, where it supposedly lives in the rainforest. They hire a native guide, but the guide can't take them to see the Orang Pendek. He can take them to this village to talk to one guy who saw it one time years ago. That's how rare it is to see this. Well, okay,
Right.
that could be real. You can't have a Bigfoot that like you see in Pennsylvania. You see in Illinois. I mean, though, we'd have a body then. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I am with
Yeah.
you, and it's something that I struggle with too, which is why, yeah, I mean, if somebody asked me a question like you did, Bigfoot is not the first thing that comes to mind in terms of something that is the most likely to represent in undiscovered animal species, at least as how we view animals, right? But for all of the reasons that you mentioned, like you would need a certain population size to have a breeding population. There should be signs of predation. I mean,
Yes,
something that
they'd have to
big.
eat a lot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine if they are primates, then they are at least omnivorous, which means they should be eat. We should notice a gap in the deer population or whatever the hell they're eating, right? Like there would be signs, and there are people who study stuff like this, and so they would know. Like they'd be like, hey, there should be this many deer, but there's only this many deer. What's eating them all? We have questions, but that doesn't happen, right? And the other part, and I think you touched on this too, is like where would they live? Of course, like you've got sightings coming out of Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, a lot of states. Now, if you're talking northern Wisconsin, there are some pretty thick forests up there. Sure, fine. But like that southeastern corridor with like the Kettle Moraine and stuff, yeah, the Kettle Moraine's a pretty big forest, but people live there, they would if there were breeding populations, you'd think that we'd have a body or at least a good photograph or something by now.
Yes.
I mean,
And
we always manage to get pictures of like mountain lions and stuff when they range down through here, like, and they're pretty rare, so.
bears, I mean, are not common in Wisconsin, but they do exist. but you
Sure.
can go to the zoo and see one, a
Right.
live one, and there's plenty of dead ones. We don't have any question about bear. There wouldn't be, we wouldn't have gone well over a century, centuries, and have not one body that, if it's just a normal animal,
Yes.
is my opinion for what it's worth,
Well, sure. And just saying that, like, okay, well, they have human intelligence or near human intelligence or whatever, and that's the reason you never find one. Well, I mean, it's not as though there aren't human cultures that have existed in remote places that are, hostile to outsiders before, but we still know about them. You know, like we know where they are and where they live and that they exist, right?
And
Like,
as frequently as Bigfoot crosses the road in front of people, one time he'd get
right. Well, there, what's interesting, like, there have been reported cases of Bigfoot getting hit, but I think he always survives, which is good for him, just from like an ecological standpoint, because I don't know if they're endangered or not, right? But, yeah, there's a lot about it that doesn't add up. And I think we can both agree that, like, we're not saying that to invalidate anybody's
Oh
experience.
no, absolutely not.
It's just the strict materialist explanation for so much of what we do. Just it holds less and less water every day. It's never explained less than it does right now. You know, like it's just, yeah, it's just not satisfying anymore because there are too many uncomfortable questions. And so you have to start to think outside of that little box. And,
And I would never tell an experiencer that they didn't have their experience, but
right.
just question maybe what it could be. I one of the very few sightings, encounters, if you want to call it, that I've ever had was of a cryptid. And it was in Richland County, Wisconsin. And fortunately, my wife was there and we both saw it at the same time. Even if we didn't see exactly the same thing or interpret it the same way. But we did see a large creature. And it only lasted a few seconds, but enough time to get a good look at it. It wasn't peripheral, it wasn't, a flash. It was we could see this thing for about 5 seconds. And it came in a very hilly country. It came running out of a cornfield, ran about 100 yards, and disappeared into a wooded area. And it was huge. And it looked, to me, it looked like a weird multicolored bear, which is not native to, it doesn't exist in nature, for one thing. And bears of any kind aren't native to Richland County. And they're so rare that when a black bear showed up in Richland County the next year, it made the news.
Sure.
And the DNR quickly found it and tranquilized him and put him back in his habitat. My wife described it as Bigfoot. She said, no, it was Bigfoot. That's what it was. That's what I saw. And we both agreed on its general like physique. But we saw it for a few seconds. I don't think if we had the ability to go into the wooded area that it had a den or something back there. I don't think that it was the kind of animal that, it wasn't a regular animal. And, I'm from a rural environment. I know what a bull looks like and a big hog looks like and a big dog. It was none of those things. I've racked my brain for anything that would look remotely like that.
Right.
And I believe that while we were seeing it, it was physical. It looked very, it was nothing ethereal. It wasn't like a projection, but I don't think it's here all the time.
Sure.
And I think kind of the same with Bigfoot, that while people are interacting with it, I think it can be very physical and can break trees or, do whatever and sometimes leave prints, but then it goes somewhere else and it's not here anymore. And that's why you don't have the ecosystem that it would take to support a creature like that. And that means it's something's beyond just the physical there. That is my two
Yeah.
cents.
No, I think that is a very valid perspective. And I think it's one that I think people should be more willing to lend some credence to, you know. I think that especially when it comes to cryptids and UFOs, both really, there are a lot of people who sort of cling to this scientific materialism, even though it's no longer serving us in these particular fields. And I think that that is becoming anachronistic. You know, like I think we'll get to a point, you know, maybe after our lifetimes, who knows, where if we are going to solve these mysteries and it turns out that we're not all crazy or something, people are going to look back at strict scientific materialism as this archaic product of its time, you know,
Yes.
this outdated mode of thinking, you know, similar to how you know, we would look at you know, previous cultures and their sort of ways of rationality, right? So yeah, I think that I think that that's totally valid. And I think that, you know, the idea that you have the material and the immaterial, and again, these are things that are totally separate and can never meet, and in fact, one of them might not even exist. Is not something that is going to serve us very well in examining these subjects. I mean, it certainly seems, by all appearances, by all appearances, that some of these experiences involve some kind of seemingly immaterial phenomenon capable of producing material effects. And I mean, that's mind-blowing stuff, but
Yes.
it's not up to us to decide what is valid and what is not valid in terms of evidence, because it fits our preconceptions. It's not up to us to judge experiences based on what we want to be true, you know, like we just have to go wherever this leads us. And right now, that's kind of where it's leading us, I
Oh,
think.
yes. Yes, I would say, completely agree. It's always interesting to me that the materialist reductionist, for lack of a better term, the there is nothing but matter and energy. That seems to take as much faith to believe as any other spiritual path, if you want to call it that. And it seems like there's a lot of people. There are people in the world, obviously, who get comfort from religion, but there are people who get comfort from disbelief too. And
Sure.
I notice that a lot of the capital A atheists, and I'm not repping any particular religion, I'm just being agnostic, but the people who are sure, 1000% sure, that there not only is no God, but they immediately jump to, and you don't have a soul. And there's no spirits, and
Right.
there's nothing, okay? It's like, you can't prove that, man. That's just what you believe, and you derive a lot of comfort from that too, don't you? Because if you know for a fact, or believe that once you die, that's it, that can also be comforting. And I think there's emotional reasons people embrace that are every bit as much as why people embrace different religions and spiritualities.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're onto something there. And that's very true. You know, like there's a big difference between having personal beliefs regarding things that cannot be proven, such as something not existing. Like you can't prove a negative, and that's why in logic, like we don't ask people to, because you can't. You know, like there's a big difference between having a personal belief about something like that and trying to impose that belief on other people as though this unprovable thing is proven, And so, like, fundamentally, I'm not asking anybody to believe anything because I've already said I don't believe in anything. But what I think it's fair to ask people to do is to be open-minded and
Yes.
to be willing to entertain a possibility without fully subscribing to it. Because really, that is at the heart of all discovery. There would be no advances in science without imagination. There
Absolutely.
would be no invention. There would be no discovery. And so even if you want to approach things rationally with critical thinking, which I think people should do,
Oh, yes.
it involves a lot of open-mindedness, and you have to be willing to entertain things that make you uncomfortable. It just is what it is.
The intolerance for ambiguity is really strong with a great many folks, and that, well, it's got to be this or it's the other thing, but it, being able to just sit with it and say, well, we don't really know. It could be this, it could be something else, it could be something we have never conceived of. And that takes some doing, and that takes some getting used to, because there is kind of a bias towards, I know it's this, and that's not a, that's almost never helpful.
Agreed.
I did want to make sure and ask you this, and this is probably a question you get from time to time. You've been doing Fortean investigations for a while. What are some reports people gave you that were really out there, but you didn't feel that it was a hoax or that this person, has some kind of mental problems or something that seemed to have validity, but was just really strange? Was anything spring to mind?
Oh, I mean, there's been quite a few. I spoke to a woman in, I want to say Kenosha, who said that she had woken up one night to see a charcoal cloud with this like amber colored orb inside of it floating in one corner of her bedroom. And so she sees this thing and, she thinks she must be asleep, must be dreaming. And so she tries to go back to sleep like multiple times, right? And she thinks, okay, if I try to go back to sleep and I look again, it won't be there. And every time she would do that, it was still there. Like it just hung
Wow.
out until like eventually, much later, she manages to actually fall back asleep. But she wasn't frightened or anything. It was just kind of a thing that was
What
there, and
is, yeah, what is this?
right,
Wow.
and it was very apparent to her, and so because she had looked to see if there could have been any other explanation, like a trick of light coming through the window or something, and none of that really made sense to her, and so the whole experience seemed very credible to me in terms of it being authentically represented. I felt very much that what she was telling me was what her actual experience was, and that's what's important to me,
Oh,
frankly.
yes.
And so it was interesting. I talked to her more, because I of course went into my whole, have you ever experienced anything else? And she had actually had quite a few other experiences, even sort of growing up in a seemingly haunted house, and even having other interactions with strange invisible entities at other points in her life. I gotta tell you though, one of the weirdest experiences, which might not seem super weird to other people, but it was certainly weird to me because at the time I had never really heard of anything that had so closely matched some of my experiences. I talked to this lady up in Rogers, Minnesota. And she wanted to tell me about this shadow person that she had seen in her house. And so She told me about how one night she was talking on the phone and she saw this shadow person glide up her stairs. She has like a two-story house and it glides up the stairs to the second floor. And at the time she was concerned because it seemed like it was going towards her grandson's room. And she had custody of her grandson. And so he lived with her. And so she quickly ended her phone call and went upstairs to see what the hell was going on, right? Concerned for her grandson. And there was nothing. There's nobody there, right? And so the next morning, her grandson, whose name is Toby, which is the other thing I find really interesting about this. So this kid has the same name as me. So the next morning, her grandson comes into her room, which was normal. He would do this, and woke her up, and she was like, "Okay, well, whatever. Like, I'm gonna get up and go to the bathroom, and then we can get our day started." And she gets up to go to the bathroom, but then he comes hauling after her into the bathroom, and he is frightened of something. And so at the time, he wasn't very old. I want to say he was like 5, right? And so she manages to get out of him what was going on, and he basically tells her that he had seen this like this red-eyed monster thing, right? Like this shadow monster with these red eyes. And so at that point, like, she's very uncomfortable. And later still, this I think would have been year like several years later, if memory serves, she had her nephew was staying over. And her nephew would stay in the same room as her grandson, of course, because why wouldn't he, right? And or maybe it was another, no, it was another grandson. I believe they were cousins. Anyway, like that part of the story isn't important, so I don't have it in front of me. People can read this, like I have it written down. But anyway, so he's staying over. And he wakes up in the night and sees this figure standing in the doorway to this bedroom. And he described it to her the next day as this shadow person, like this shadow man standing there, and he's looking right at Toby's bed, like he's just watching him. And as soon as he notices this, as soon as this thing notices this other person observing it vanishes. And that was so interesting to me, the idea that whatever this thing was, like it clearly had an interest in this one particular kid, right? For whatever reason. And to the point where when other people observed it was really only during the act of it having interest in this kid, like it's very apparent. And when I heard that, I was just floored because I hadn't heard a lot of experiences from people that had mirrored my own, but I'd always had that sense that we weren't supposed to be awake for any of this. And certainly this kid wasn't. And I don't think he was supposed to be either for whatever was happening. And who knows how many other experiences he might have had that were even similar to mine, beyond the stuff that other people had seen, that he wouldn't have even been aware of for the most part, and so that's one that that's just always
That's
stuck with me.
really interesting. And it kind of brings up something that, with this whole phenomena, the entities, like the one you just described, they seem to us to be scary, but they almost never harm anyone.
True.
And even things like poltergeist activity. Well, if whatever's moving things around or even throwing things around, it seems like if it wanted to really hurt somebody, it could do that in any number of ways. And that almost never happens. And you don't see situations where, well, you have Bigfoot, he's 8 feet tall and 500 pounds of muscle, and nobody ever gets hurt. You know what I mean? He may
Right.
scare you and even charge at you, but he never does any harm. And people have alien abduction experiences, but at least in America, they tend to be returned and generally be physically unharmed. Now, there's a couple of weird exceptions where people got cancer, but that to me, I don't think those were aliens. I think theirs were much, I'm just speculating, but I
Sure.
think
So
they
you've
may
got
have
like
been military craft or something.
the Cash Landrum incident down
Yes,
in Texas with the radiation burns. Yeah, sure.
which I'm almost certain, and this is just me talking, but I am almost certain that that was a military project. And I didn't know this until quite recently when Aaron Gullius brought it up, but the Cash Landrum event and the Rendlesham Forest in Britain happened within a 24-hour period. And I did not know that. And that made it seem like, okay, this is just a really sophisticated aircraft that flew from, across the Atlantic that very quickly. And yeah, I could see somebody got radiation burns from that. Yeah. But
Right.
you're more, paranormal things like shadow people, like poltergeists, like ghosts or entities. They never seem to really hurt anybody. And that's very interesting because we sometimes perceive them as evil, but if they really wanted to do something evil, they could do a hell of a lot more than what they do,
Sure. Yeah,
And
well,
that.
that's why I've always said. I mean, if I was gonna be hurt, I'd be hurt by now, right? Like,
Yes,
and
yes.
I tell that to witnesses too, because a lot of times, these events are they're very frightening, bordering on traumatic,
Oh, yes.
seemingly. And so people will be very concerned, and they'll ask me if they have a good cause for their concern, if they are in danger, physical danger. And I tell them the same thing. I say, well, I think that, like, if any of us were going to be hurt, we'd be hurt by now. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody has ever been seriously physically harmed by any of these monsters. Like,
Yes.
it just hasn't happened. Now, of course, there are people who are going to argue with that, and they'll bring up things like the missing 411 and all of that. And that would have to be a whole separate episode
Yes,
to really
indeed.
dig into why I don't think that's honestly cause for great concern, at least when it comes to the paranormal. Getting lost and dying of exposure in like a national park is very concerning, and
Oh,
there are very
yes.
real safety measures that you can take to prevent
Yes.
that, and that's what's really happening. It's
Yes.
not, like, I don't think you have to wear Bigfoot repellent when you go to Yellowstone or anything,
I
because,
would concur. You're talking
right.
about people disappearing in places where people would likely disappear,
Yes,
Now,
right.
some of those stories he does bring up are pretty interesting, where the kids particularly are found places that, like, 7 miles away. And this is like a 4-year-old child. I like, how the hell would that happen? I don't know. But yeah, they tend to take place in dangerous places.
Right.
And you're like infinitely more likely to be harmed by a fellow human than you are by a shadow person or a spirit.
Yes.
That to me is overwhelmingly true and obvious,
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I have a concealed carry license because it's legal to have those here,
Oh,
and
yes,
it's
same
not because
here.
I'm worried about Bigfoot. It's because I am out very late at night in some questionable places doing this,
Yes.
and it's human beings that you have to watch out for. So.
I'm laughing because I'm thinking of who they were escapes me, but I was listening to a couple of ghost hunters talk about their adventures, and they said that the The scariest thing by far was when they went to this old farmhouse to ghost hunt, and it had become a meth lab.
Oh,
And
God.
yes, the people making the meth are there, and they didn't. They realized they could get the hell out of here as fast as we possibly can because they might actually kill us. The ghosts aren't going to do anything. It's going to be fine.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a real horror story. Like that would scare the crap out of me. No,
Yes,
thank you.
indeed. Same here. Well, we've kind of getting a little low on time here, Tobias. Really appreciated talking with you. Is
Yeah.
there anything you'd like our listeners to know?
Oh boy. Yeah, I suppose if you're interested in what we do at the Singular Fortean Society, then I would encourage people to follow us on social media. So you can follow the Singular Fortean Society on Facebook, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, oh gosh, TikTok, Tumblr, like literally every social media platform that you can think of. And that's the best way to sort of keep up with what we have going on. I think the handle on most of them is just like at Singular Fortean. And I've got some projects coming up that I can't yet talk a ton about, but I've got a pretty exciting book that I'm working on with one of my friends. And that's for like a larger publisher,
Oh, wow.
at least in the paranormal sphere. I mean, people will know who this publisher is. And I've got a television project coming out this year
Oh,
that
wow.
I signed an NDA for it, and they haven't said I can talk about it yet, but I it's coming out, and it's pretty exciting, and I think people will want to know about that too. And the best way to find out about those when I can actually talk about them
Certainly, certainly.
is just by following us on social media. So otherwise, I've got some events coming up in early summer. Would be the next time. So let's see, I think June 1st and 2nd is Spirits in the Spring in Broadhead, Wisconsin. And then later that month, I believe it's the 22nd. I should probably check my calendar real quick if my phone will cooperate. Yes, 22nd. So like the 21st and 22nd of June then is Haunted America down in
Okay.
Alton. And so we will be down there as well. So, I mean, if anybody is near either of those areas, they're both fantastic events. Like, especially if you've never been to Haunted America or any of Troy's stuff he has going on down there. It's just a great, great, great time. It's a huge conference. There's always a ton of people. They're always very interested and knowledgeable, in the subject matter, which I really like. A lot of readers as opposed to like TV watchers, which is nice. No
Yes,
offense to anybody, but I'm a writer, so I have to favor readers,
yes.
So, but yeah, that'll be exciting. I have some other stuff coming up later in the year, but we'll just worry about June for now, I guess, because that's
And
next.
from time to time, you co-host a podcast.
I do, yeah. So I have been co-hosting on Wednesdays. We talk weird fortnightly with Ashley Hilt. I used fortnight. A lot of people say biweekly, but that's not what biweekly means. It's fortnightly. But anyway,
Biweekly would
and
mean twice a week, right?
correct. You see, you know. But anyway, yeah, that's been a lot of fun. She is a wonderful human being that has been a friend of mine for a while, and I would be a guest relatively frequently on there, and so I like I loved Pato too as a co-host. I always enjoyed listening to him, but given the opportunity to help out, when she needed people to step in. And as much fun as it's been, I have to say I'm really enjoying it, and I'm glad I took that opportunity. So.
Oh yes, she's been on the Weird Part a few times, and I actually met her at a like group chat at the Singular 14 Society. So
Oh, okay, that
it
makes
all
sense.
wraps around. Yes. But yeah,
Not surprising.
really nice person with some fascinating stuff.
Oh yeah, she's great. As part of the new book project I'm working on. I'm going to head out to the Mothman Festival later this year.
Ah.
And so that'll be nice because I know she'll be there, and she goes there. She's very familiar with that area, and so she'll be able to kind of show me all the secret spots and everything. So
That's something
that'll be
I'd love to
interesting.
get to one of these years.
This will be
Absolutely.
my first time, which is
Oh.
surprising for people because I've written so much about the winged humanoid stuff around Lake Michigan, but yeah, I haven't had good reason. I haven't had like a really good professional reason until now, basically. I've considered doing it other times, but like the stars need to align in a certain way, and they finally
Yes,
have,
yes.
so.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, hey, definitely like to have you back in the future,
Yeah.
and you can tell us about it.
I'd love to. That would be great.
Well, hey, thanks again for being with us tonight, Tobias, and we look forward to having you back again.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yes, folks, this has been The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Trewell. My special guest tonight has been Tobias Wayland. Thank you for listening, and good night.